Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Keely Boltina, filling in for host Lori Walsh. January 27th is the anniversary of the liberation of one of the most well-known and heinous death camps of World War II. It's Auschwitz. It's been 71 years since that day, and historians say we must acknowledge how people turned against fellow human beings then and that it matters now in 2016. Patrick Hicks is an author with a diverse background and many roles, one being the writer-in-residence at Augustana University here in Sioux Falls. His first novel focused on the death camps of the Holocaust. He joins me in our studio at the University of Sioux Falls. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Keely.
So we know you've written at least two books dealing with World War II and the Holocaust, and we've talked with you before about this your work, and I just want to get a little bit of insight from you because you didn't live during World War II. You are not Jewish. You do not have a religious connection directly to this. So why is this a subject matter for you?
Well, I know this sounds a little strange, but I sometimes think that stories choose writers rather than writers choosing stories. I'll give you just a very obvious example. My son was adopted from South Korea. So because of that, I immediately care far more about Korean history and culture and language and all of those things which are attached to his ancestral DNA. I'm not entirely sure why I've been drawn to World War II and the Holocaust. I think it has something to do with I was exposed to the Holocaust at a very, very young age. I remember seeing a documentary on PBS that really challenged me to think quite deeply about what we're capable of doing to each other as human beings. And I was around my grandfather, talked about World War II an awful lot. He lived in Northern Ireland, also not Jewish, but still all these stories were sort of circling around me. And now that I'm a professional writer, it seems to be one of those topics that I keep orbiting around. And I think it's because it represents the very darkest part of our souls, of what we are capable of doing as a species.
Right. It's scary. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of firsthand research into this, for your books, for yourself, and you've been to Auschwitz. So tell me about this concentration camp, why we care so much about this one in Nazi-occupied Poland, and why we have to pay attention to what happened.
These are really good questions. And Auschwitz has come to be emblematic of the entire Holocaust. And we like to think of the Nazis as being very systematic and having a very clear plan of what they were doing. But the reality is that when Hitler came to power, there was an idea of relocating the Jews. But the Nazis sort of zigzagged along, not really sure what their ultimate plan was. And they ultimately arrived at the idea of industrialized genocide fairly late into the war at the Wannsee Conference. And originally the plan was to relocate the Jews somewhere else. And Auschwitz became the culmination of many different sorts of experiments, I suppose, is one way to talk about it. But it became the central location, both as a death camp and as a concentration camp. And Auschwitz was singular in the Nazi universe. There was no place like Auschwitz. It was enormous. And to visit the place, I think, is the only way to get an understanding of the scale of Auschwitz. And today, International Holocaust Remembrance Day, the reason that we commemorate today and think about the Holocaust as a global community is that it was today, 71 years ago, that the Soviets liberated Auschwitz.
And even the name of the camp, despite the fact that I don't have a breadth of knowledge about World War II or the Holocaust, resonates. I know exactly what you're talking about. I get the images in the forefront of my mind. When you say Auschwitz, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's one of those cultural touchstones of evil, which I think is a part of anyone that is aware of it, has some sort of awareness of global history and sensitivity to what happened in the past. And Auschwitz is actually, I think many people erroneously think it's located in Germany, and it's not. It's located in Poland, and it's just southeast of the city of Krakow by about an hour. And Auschwitz is actually a German name. The town was actually Oswiecim. And when the Germans took over Poland, like they did everywhere else, they erased the Polish language. And the little town of Oswiecim was Germanicized and it became Auschwitz.
you've been there. What mm-hmm. do you feel when you stand in that place where so much bad happened?
That's a really hard thing to express in words. And goodness knows I've tried because I'm a writer. But to study this place from a distance and to look at documentaries, to look at photos, to listen to interviews with people that survived Auschwitz, this is all one thing. But to walk the soil of the place is a very, very different matter. And it's incredibly sobering to stand in front of the gas chambers and the crematoria. And Auschwitz was never designed to last. The Nazis had calculated out that they could murder all of the Jews of Europe by 1955, and Auschwitz was going to be plowed into the ground at that point in time. So to visit Auschwitz today is it's to visit a place that was not designed to last to 2016. So many of the buildings are in bad shape right now.
We are decades away from this, but to see some of the grainy video and the photos or hear the stories about suffering and injustice and what seems like tangible hatred, how are people expected to process it? Because it's scary to think that people can do that to other people.
It is. It's very scary. And I think actually the fact that our main encounter visually with the Holocaust is through black and white footage, that lulls us into a belief that it happened a long time ago. And it did not. It happened very, very recently as far as history is concerned. But we see these images in black and white, and I think we can maybe insulate ourselves and feel like, we've moved on. That would never happen again. We are more enlightened than that. And I have a real problem believing that. And I think that we have a duty to confront what happened in the Holocaust because it was only two generations ago. We have people on this planet right now where if you mention the word Holocaust, they're right back there in their memory because it happened to them when they were children. It was not long ago.
I'm struck by this idea that it's my duty to acknowledge, to try to understand, to try to feel this because I don't want to. These are not happy things. This is not, although darkly fascinating, this is not something I want to try to experience. And you're saying we have to do that.
Yeah, I believe that we do. I think it's a part of your responsibility as a global citizen. And I say that as someone who's in his mid-40s and I grew up with the idea that the Holocaust will never happen again. That's one of the phrases we hear from the Holocaust, nie wieder, never again. But in my relatively short time on the planet, there's been four genocides. And I'm confronted with the horrifying thought that have we learned anything from the Holocaust other than how to dispatch life faster? And that is a really hard thing for me to grapple with. But I think that we need to. Because quite frankly, the United States has not done enough to stop genocides in the past.
And when we're looking at this International Day of Remembrance from the UN, talk about the fact that it's multifaceted. We have to acknowledge and remember the people who were killed. There were victims who are also survivors who, you know, endured this firsthand. There are people at risk their lives to help those people who were being victimized. And then we have all of these soldiers worldwide that came together. There are just so many layers to this.
Yes, so many layers that perhaps that's another reason that it's maybe a little bit of a challenge to approach it. And I teach a course on the Holocaust at Augustana University. And because of my novel, The Commandant of Lubezeck, I have the great fortune of traveling around the United States and talking about, yes, the novel, but more importantly for me, the Holocaust itself. And invariably what I find time and time again when I talk to people at book festivals and universities is that people think they understand the Holocaust. And then I start mentioning what happened in some of the camps, or I start talking about the progression of how the Final Solution actually evolved. And people say, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that either. And I see that as sort of my responsibility as a writer is to shed light on those.
Tell us more about that. What do people think that they know? And then how do you help them understand that this was bigger than they're able to boil down into a couple of sentences.
Sure, and by all means, the last thing I want to do is to, you know, minimize what happened at Auschwitz.
Absolutely
not. The story goes beyond the parameters and borders of that one horrible and enormous place. But when Germany invaded Poland, there was a group of many groups of soldiers called the Einsatzgruppen, and their job was to go into places like Poland and Lithuania, Latvia, and they would round up all of the Jews, take them into the forest, force them to dig their own graves, and then they would shoot them. And we're still finding those graves through satellite imaging. And most people, I think, understand that there were approximately 6 million victims of the Holocaust. This was just about 2 years ago, the United States Holocaust and Memorial Museum, one of their research teams, believe now the number is probably closer to 15 million. Double what we think. And it's double, I think, largely because of what happened with the Einsatzgruppen and also the vast variety of subcamps. I mean, we think of Auschwitz, but there were 40 subcamps that girdled Auschwitz. So the level of suffering, I think, is just beyond our imagination, but I think that we need to try to imagine it.
Because there were so many people affected, and the majority, because the violence... The murder was directed at the Jewish people, but that doesn't mean that Jews were the only people who died.
No. And this is something that I think an awful lot of people do tend to understand, that the gypsies, homosexuals, intellectuals, anyone that might have been socialist or communist. I mean, the communists suffered greatly in many of these camps. As did a huge, huge number of people. Anyone that was deemed an enemy of the state was obviously put into these places. And chief amongst those people, of course, were those who happened to be Jewish.
You mentioned earlier that sometimes we think of the Nazi regime as having a point-by-point plan and knowing exactly what was going on. I'll be honest, it feels easier to understand if they had a point-by-point plan and a very specific end game. It's harder for me to understand that people went along with this when there was – I mean, some of the footage that we do have is people are smiling as they assault, other people. As it's unfathomable.
It is unfathomable, and I think it's especially so if you come from a society that is largely peaceful. And these are really hard things to sort of wrap our heads around. And yet, it happened again in Rwanda. 1 year people were living in relative harmony, and the next 800,000 people were murdered in 800 days. 80 days, 800,000 people in 80 days, which is a number that just I can't imagine. I can't imagine that many people being dead.
So the takeaway really is this concept that it may be considered the past, but that doesn't mean that all of the motivations, that all of the evil that was able to just grow insidiously, that's just gone.
Precisely. I mean, there's such a tiny Jewish community in a country like Poland today, and we've lost those voices. We've lost that culture. Who knows what the great-great-grandchild of someone who perished in Auschwitz would have gone on to do today? Maybe they were another Einstein. We'll never know, and they've been lost to us forever. So it affects us in ways that I don't think that we tend to think about, that just that sense of absence of culture and voice and intellect. They're not there anymore.
I, like you, I am not of Jewish heritage. I didn't live through it, but I'm also not called to write about it. So how do I take this day of remembrance and really try to recognize something in it, to honor the people that were affected, but also to learn from it just in my individual life?
I think the fact that we're talking about it is a good step. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about International Holocaust Remembrance Day, is that we have a day where the spotlight is pointed backwards. But in looking backwards, of course, we have to ask some hard questions about moving forward and hatred. And where does that hatred come from? And, who do we demonize? And we do demonize a lot of people in our own society, immigrants, for example. And, it can be a short step, that short step of hatred. And I think we need to be very cautious about that.
remembering that we're just not as far away from it as we'd like to think.
We have the same DNA and the same thought structure as everyone in the 1930s and 40s. There's no reason why we are not capable of killing as well.
Patrick Hicks is an author of many books. He is writer in residence at Augustana University. His first novel focused on the death camps of the Holocaust, and he visited some as part of the research for his book. Patrick, thank you for your insight today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Up next on Dakota Midday, tonight's Nova premiere examines a debilitating earthquake that rocked Nepal last spring. Hear how scientists are analyzing what happened and trying to predict the next megaquake. You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We'll be right back.